I speak for the fans in a lot of ways. I know how they feel. They're great. They're loyal. They want a bang for their buck.
Welcome, everybody, to episode 54 of the LarshCast. On this jam-packed episode, we are joined by Brendan Batchelor, Katie Caldwell, and Vic Nazar. We'll be discussing some hockey and some football, so stay tuned and get ready. Let's go.
Hold up.
All right, everybody, welcome to episode 54 of the LarshCast. We are joined once again from one of the original guests that we had back on episode 6, none other than the voice of the Canucks on Sportsnet 650, Brendan Batchelor. How are you doing, Batch?
Good, guys. How are you?
Doing pretty good.
Great.
It's good to have you back. The last time you were on, if you remember, we had you do a play call, you know, on a whim.
Oh, yeah, I remember.
Using all the brand new Canucks, and you nailed it. And so we got a little surprise for you later on today. We're going to see if you can do a little bit more of that deja vu magic right there. It's actually combined for us and for Tanbeer, who's back. That's right. Yeah. Tanbeer's back on the LarshCast. What happened? I thought you were banned from the LarshCast, Tanbeer.
Yeah, apparently you kicked me out of the group. And that's what everybody was saying. But we were just renegotiating our contract. So. Yeah. I got a $6 million deal, so I hope it doesn't trigger you guys.
Make an LOE.
I hope you're okay getting paid in like Monopoly money, because that's
I'm down for some Canadian Tire money, Monopoly money, any kind of money you can give me, I'm down.
There you go. And then you don't have a no movement clause, so you know, for the expansion, yeah. we might get you out of here. But
yeah. First to go.
It's all good.
Also today, guys, I know you all have been waiting for this announcement on the Luongo jersey giveaway. Thanks to Brendan Batchelor himself. You know, that's very generous of you to donate a jersey, an authentic Luongo jersey. So thank you for doing that, Batchelor.
Yeah, no problem.
We are going to have a set of rules that everybody, you know, to apply to get different entries. To get one entry on either Twitter or Instagram, you just have to like the post. So when we put the episode out, if you like it on Instagram or Twitter, you get one entry. Now, to get two entries, you just have to retweet and like. Now, on Instagram, that means you share the story and like it. You get two entries. Now, here's the kick. For five bonus entries, only for the listeners. This is not on social media. So for all of you guys listening, if you want five bonus entries on a chance to win the Luongo jersey, all you have to do for Instagram, when you share the story, write a comment about your favorite part of the episode. And on Twitter, when you retweet with a quote and tell us your favorite part of the episode, and you'll get five bonus entries. Once we get all the numbers in, probably by next Tuesday's episode, I think, maybe this weekend, we'll announce the winner on a live draw. And you know, whoever wins, congratulations. We're going to be doing a lot more giveaways too, going forward, more jerseys, more pictures. We got a signed Chubarov and Linden you know, picture that we're going to give away on Thursday. I was going to do it today, but we'll save that for Thursday. And yeah, lots of cool stuff coming your way, guys. So once again, thank you, Batch. And everybody, get ready for that one. So today's topic, the 12.5% lottery chance if we lose to the Wild. There's been a lot of talk about this. It's obviously, you know, encapsulated the market. There's a lot of different views on it. I have a strong view on it. I'll save mine for last. But first of all, you know, I want to go around the table here, and I want to ask, starting with Batch, what are your personal views on the whole playoffs versus 12.5%? Should they lose? You know, the idea that, you know, tanking is healthy for a team that we have full of young guys that are roaring for the playoffs and roaring to go and compete for the cup. Your thoughts,
Batch? It's an interesting conversation to have, because obviously if you're going to talk about your ideal scenarios, winning the Stanley Cup or making the Stanley Cup final is right at the top of that list for every team. But, you know, it makes sense to me that the second thing that you would want in a perfect world on that list would be the number one overall pick. If they can bring in a guy like Alexi Lafreniere or Quinton Byfield to add to this young group of guys they've already got, that would be phenomenal. In a perfect situation, yes, absolutely, you want that to happen. But it's 12.5%. Like, you know, that is a healthy percentage, but you have to realize that that's still what, 87.5% chance that you're not going to get that first overall pick. So, you know, I could understand the rationalization behind it if it was like 50-50 odds you get the first overall pick, because then, you know, that could be a franchise defining thing if you bring in Alexi Lafreniere. But, you know, to lose a play-in series and have that little odds, in my personal opinion, isn't something where I would look at it and say, oh, we've got to lose just because you might have a chance. Mm-hmm. But that said, I do understand people that want that result, because it would be a very big addition for this organization to have another young, talented player like that. But, you know, regardless of what fans think and regardless of what arguments we see on Twitter, the fact is the guys in the dressing room and the coaching staff and everyone in the organization is going to be trying to win that series. And, you know, Travis Green has said this to me in interviews numerous times in the past. Players don't care about draft picks. Players don't care about any of that. You know, even young guys like Quinn Hughes and Elias Pettersson, who are going to be a part of this franchise for a long time yet to come, they're not going to be thinking going into game one against Minnesota, well, maybe we shouldn't try that hard because we could get the first over. That's just not the way those guys are wired. So I understand people that want that to be the end result. And, you know, if everything falls in line and that does happen, it will be a huge moment for the Canucks and potentially a franchise defining moment. But the odds are still not anywhere to the point where it makes sense to me, if you're a fan, to be rooting against your team.
Now, before I get to Tanbir, Ryan, Gulu, let me ask you this, Batch. What do you think about fans who are actively cheering for Minnesota to win?
Well, I mean, everybody is allowed to express their fandom in whatever way they see fit, right? So it's one of those things where, do I agree with that personally? Is that the stance I would take if, you know, I was thinking of it from a fan's perspective? No. But in the end, people that are thinking that way want the best for this team, just like, you know, people that want them to win the series want the best for this team. The argument is about what is the best for this organization. So, you know, would I cheer against a team that I liked based on a 12.5% chance for a first overall pick? No, I wouldn't. But, you know, there are lots of people with differing opinions out there. And that's kind of what makes the Canucks fan base and Canucks Twitter so unique and so great, is that, you know, the opinions you see out there run the gamut from, you know, Team Tank on one end of the spectrum to, you know, people that you know, want them to win every game and everything in between, right? So, mm-hmm. You know, it wouldn't be my personal choice, but, you know, it's fans are going to react to things the way that they individually do. And that's part of why sports are so great, is, you know, we don't all have the same opinion and we are each able to equally express the way we feel about things.
Let's go to Ryan. What are your thoughts on the Team Tank, Team Playoffs, 12.5% if we lose to the Wild? What do you think, Ryan?
I think, I definitely agree with Bash when he's talking about every fan's got the right to want to view this the way they want. I think I have a sense here that we're all going to fall into a pretty similar camp, that we're against that. And to me, it just comes down to the culture, having played on teams and with teammates. As soon as you've set the tone that something like that becomes acceptable, and I'd be the first to admit, like, I don't think that's something that the team's even capable of. What we're talking about is an external fan issue, the perception of the marketplace. It's not something that's happening, you know, inside that locker room. This debate is not happening. That there's no conversation of that nature. You know what I mean? So
strictly from a fan
exactly. And I get why fans would want that, but to me, I don't know why you would wish that sort of thing upon the team that you want to cheer for, because as soon as you have that culture of losing, I mean, these are young guys and that sets the tone for the rest of their career. And these are kids right now, high draft picks that are used to winning, that have been on good teams, that are used to excelling. The more they lose, the more that mentality shifts for them. And I think the desire goes with that as well too. So, and from a personal standpoint, I just want to see them play well and I want to see them win games. And I don't care what that does to the draft pick, as long as I get to enjoy watching my team play.
Tamir?
Yeah, like, I guess you could, I sort of agree with Batch when he says every fan has their right to, you know, be the fan however they want to be. But me personally, I feel like those fans have a culture like the Buffalo Sabres or the Cleveland Cavaliers or like the Detroit Pistons or like the Chicago Bulls or all those losing culture teams. You think Bo Horvat wants to be Jack Eichel? You think Bo Horvat or Brock Besser want to be Taylor Hall and Nugent Hopkins and Yakupov and all those guys in Edmonton? Once you build a losing culture, it's so hard to get out of. Like Jim Benning said, it's a black hole. And while this year we have sort of gone away from it, the fan base is starting to get that losing mindset back again just because of 12.5%. And that's not a good mindset to have. And I think obviously the players are going to be trying out there. You think, did we not learn anything from The Last Dance, people? The leader leads by example. You think Elias Pettersson's out there, we need Lafreniere? Why is our fan base thinking like this? Do you not trust Elias Pettersson and Quinn Hughes and Brock Besser and Bo Horvat and JT Miller and Jacob Markstrom? Do you not trust those guys? Because that's where I have a problem with these fans. It's they don't trust the young talent we have. And I guess you could make the argument for Jay Beagle, who's won a Stanley Cup with the Washington Capitals, or Brandon Sutter, who's been playing in the league for that long. And you know how much I've complained about Brandon Sutter's contract. Tyler Myers, he's been our best right shot defenseman this year. The fans will always have a problem with their contracts, but that does not mean they can't help you win a cup or go far in the playoffs. I think getting experience for this team is good, and it's a way to get out of this losing culture and build a winning culture. And JT Miller helped with that, coming from Tampa Bay and bringing that along to the Vancouver Canucks. I want to continue seeing that happen year after year so my team could eventually do what the St. Louis Blues did. Mm-hmm. Go through some tough times and then find a way to win the cup. The Chicago Blackhawks had a few years of tough times too. And the Vancouver Canucks in 2011, they didn't win the cup, but they had some tough times before that. And I want to see this core group do that. And that's what our mindset should be as fans.
Well said. Gulu, your thoughts?
Yeah, you know, I want to just echo some of the same sentiments that everybody else has. Like, as a member of this community, I want everybody to be able to express their fandom in a way they see fit, right? I don't want to superimpose my idea of what it means to be a fan on anybody. That being said, as a fan of this team, I want to see them win, right? And as a fan of this team, when I see somebody saying, hey, you know, I want to see this team lose for a high draft pick, sometimes I feel like, oh my God, this person is so lost. But whatever, let them be the way they want to be. I just want to be sitting in front of my TV with a beer in my hand, watching the Canucks play a game. And then, you know, maybe Tanvir's there, maybe you're there. And when Petey scores a big goal, I want to be able to cheer. And I think in terms of a long-term outlook for this team, each way you go, there are benefits. You know, like if you add a Lafreniere to the team, you know, I know it's a 12.5% chance if they lose that they'll pick first overall. That's great for the team. I think if they pick a player in the top 15 of this draft, I think they'll have a great outlook for the team. If they end up winning the play-in round and they go further into the playoffs, I also think that experience is great for this team. So, you know, I see TJ online say this is a win-win scenario, and I 100% agree with you. Either way the team performs, it's a win-win scenario.
But don't you guys want to see...
Go ahead, Tanker.
Don't you guys want to see this fan base come together? Like, just, like, actually, like, when we were winning games and we were good, this fan base was together, celebrating in the streets and having fun and wanting to win the cup. And it was one of the best things that's ever happened for the Canucks in 50 years. And don't you want to see that happen again? And seeing the mindset that these fans have sometimes, it really bothers me. Because I understand the Willie Desjardins when our team was bad and we had to get players like Pettersson and Hughes. But when you see a team that had five, almost 20 goal scorers, elite.
No. We were on pace to have 7-20 goal scorers in the NHL. No other team was close to seven.
There were a couple
that were like five, maybe one that was six, but nobody was close to seven.
Yeah, and the fans were like still saying this team is mediocre, just disrespecting the way the team played this year and how hard they worked. And they had some defensive issues, but I think that we should be proud of what the team accomplished this year. And whether the season happens or not, we should have a mindset of wanting to win now. Because I understand back a few years where it was tough, but
I don't know. Well, Tanvir, like, you know, I completely agree with you. I want to see this fan base come together. I want to see them be amped about the team. Well, the truth is, we're not there. This team doesn't have the track record to bring everybody together yet. There's some people, there's still people that are on the fence. You know, like, we got Quinn Hughes the first season. He was on Sportsnet 650 today. What did he say? Coming into this season, he wanted to play in the playoffs. And he's going to get his opportunity to make that a reality, right? For us, we believe in the team, right? There are some other fans out there that need to see it first. They need to see the players on this team perform on the highest stage. And you know what? They're going to get it this year, I think.
And that's the thing about a track record is before you win gold on the track or first place on the track, you're finishing fourth, fifth, sixth, maybe second. And then you finish first and that becomes your record. But you have to get there to the dance. Now, I feel a little different. I mean, I know you guys, you know, are trying to be all neutral here. But the thing is, I look at it like, you know, drivers on the road.
I'm not trying to be neutral.
Okay, well, here's how I feel about it. I look at fans like, you know, a bunch of drivers on the road. There are some drivers that are, you know, really excellent, stay in their lane. Some are, you know, a little faster, but they don't, you know, waver off the road or anything. And then there's some really shitty drivers out there. Shitty drivers that don't belong on the road. But, hey, you still respect them because they're on the road. And you have to have respect for all drivers on the road. But that's how I feel about the fans that are actively cheering against our team to win. You guys are the shitty drivers on the road. Now, I will respect you. I will respect you. But I don't have to agree with what you're doing. And if you're like off driving off track, well, you know, there's a reason for that. Playoffs and playoff experience is vital to the success of any team in the NHL. Now, Pettersson is 21 years old. 21 years old. And we are worrying about an 18 or Lafreniere is 18, right? An 18-year-old kid coming in and making an impact. By the time he maybe makes that impact, Pettersson's going to be 22, 23, 24. And now you're talking about an age curve where nowadays you go look at Hockey Graphs, Hockey Viz, Hockey Analytics, peak performance is around 22, 23, and 24. That's like right about right now. And Crosby, Taze, and Kane, they won cups at age 21. Malkin and Bergeron, they tasted playoffs at age 21. The team tank mentality, like you guys nailed it, it's a losing culture. You can't be chasing odds. 12.5%? 12.5%? Tampa has a better chance of getting drunk on a Saturday night than that. Like 12.5%? That's like a fool's gold, fool's errand. You're not going to nail it. First of all, maybe like, you know, a lot of teams wouldn't nail, but the Canucks are never going to win the lottery. You're not going to see the Canucks ever win the lottery. Aaron Rome in the finals, 4-game suspension equivalent to 40 games in the regular season. That's not right. Mason Raymond got hit by Boychuk. No suspension? That's not right. The Luongo signed to a contract that was legal, and they hit him with a recapture penalty?
Yeah, that's not right. That one stings.
The NHL does not want to see Vancouver win. And you know what? There's no reason for us to be trying to win. We got to do it in spite of that. We got to ride the coattails of Pettersson and Hughes and Miller and Markstrom. Markstrom may not even be on the team next year. You want to want a tank? We may not even sign him. We got to go with the guys that we got right now, and we got to get behind them. And if we don't get behind them, in my opinion, you're a shitty driver and you're a shitty fan. But listen, I understand.
Okay, all right.
How many fans out there do you think? And I know there's like Twitter, Canuck Twitter especially can feel like a fishbowl where like a couple of people tweet things and it feels like it's a big sentiment of the fan base. Like realistically.
It's a couple people with like 10 accounts each.
Pat, you gotta look at the poll questions too though. There's a lot of poll questions. I know it's on Twitter only, but you know, not your guys' station, but the other station will put out a poll question and it'll be like, what should the Canucks do? Should they lose to Minnesota or win against, you know, and you see like, it's like 80% lose to Minnesota. It's like, it's ridiculous.
Like, well, they were worded, like Batch said, I think, or somebody said it, they're worded incorrectly. And if you just like kind of word it, like what is more attractive, getting the first overall pick or playing playoff games? Obviously the first overall pick is more attractive, but that means
that's what I was saying off the top is that like number one is the Stanley Cup. Number two, if you could make it happen in a perfect world, would be to draft a guy like Alexei Lafreniere, but it's 12.5%. It's not realistic. But what I was getting to was like, you know, let's say August 1st, whatever the day is, puck's about to drop, the Canucks and the Minnesota Wild, the first time they've played anything close to a playoff game in over 5 years. And I know they're not going to be technically playoff games, but it's a best of five series. You're going into it. It feels like the playoffs. How many people out there do you legitimately think in the Canuck fan base are not cheering for the team to win in that moment? Like people could talk a big game about what they'd like right now, but when you get to that moment, I think like 99%, if not more, of Canuck fans.
I agree with Bats.
Agreed. 99.99%.
The reason I agree with Bats.
And the sec-
a good point by Batch, I was actually going to talk about this. I've noticed when the Canucks win a game, Twitter's the best place. People are all happy, and they're like, oh, we just won, and like
sunshine and roses, yeah, and
then, and yeah, the next day they'll be like, the next day they'll be like, Team Tank. I'm like, what? Yeah, man.
I have a beef with Twitter. Like, I was kind of like talking about it, and I think Batch really like, you know, alluded to it right now. It's a perfect example, but it's a small percentage of fans that really, you know, for me sometimes they're referenced as a larger voice of the Canucks. I don't really like that. I don't like seeing articles about Canucks Twitter in major media publications talking about, oh, Canucks fans are gonna hope Minnesota wins. That's not true. That's a small like fraction on Twitter that may think that, but the
vocal minority. It's a vocal minority.
But that hurts. It hurts our image to see that as fans. Like, we're reading these articles, and like, that's not how I feel. Like, I don't want Minnesota to win. But they're in these articles and publications, like, and it hurts our image. You know why? Because people rely on Twitter too much, because it's a great source of feedback for our, you know, journalists and reporters and you know, broadcasters. It's instant gratification, instant feedback. You can, you know, put something out, people are automatically within seconds, you know, replying to you. So you get that, you know, relationship, but it's not reflective of the market as a whole.
Well, and the time that I realized that, the first time that I realized that. Because again, you can get caught in that fishbowl and you can think that Canuck Twitter, and you know, sometimes Canuck Twitter is reflective of the way the fan base feels, but many times it's not. And when I realized that was the day the Canucks and Jim Benning extended Eric Gudbranson. So, you know, that they signed him to a contract extension, and you went on Twitter, and regardless of your feelings about the contract, that's not the point here. You go on Twitter and everybody on Twitter to a man is crapping all over. I can't believe they re-signed Gudbranson. Look at the money they gave him. They've already committed to guys like Erickson. They can't do that. Canucks posted a photo on Instagram being like, hey, we signed Eric Gudbranson. And you looked at the comments on Instagram and they were all like, yay, goody, so happy you're back. One of my favorite guys, like, so awesome that you're going to be on the. So, like, that's the thing, is that there is a large portion of the fan base that, you know, probably isn't as tapped into the minutiae as many people on Twitter are when it comes to, you know, how much of the salary cap that contract's going to take up and, you know, are they committing too much money in the bottom six and things like that. There are people out there that just love to cheer for this team. And, you know, we see a lot of times when the team isn't as good, maybe there isn't as much engagement, but then the team gets better and there's a whole bunch of fans that are like, oh, okay, I'm back on the bandwagon. I want the Canucks to win. So, you know, just because we are all in that Twitter fishbowl and we're all very engaged and we all have a lot of knowledge and understanding of the position this team is in, not just on the ice or with line combinations or things like that, but off the ice and the salary cap implications and all of the business of hockey, there's a lot of people out there that just watch the games because they love hockey and they don't care about stuff like that.
So here's the other thing too, though. Okay, go ahead, Teach. Sorry, go ahead.
I think you might be saying the same thing. I want to add, like, you're talking about people more in tune with the minutiae. I think actually that's a bit unfair because there are a lot of people outside of Twitter that are very smart.
That's exactly my point. So here's the thing, because I just joined Twitter because of doing this podcast several days ago. And my perception is that actually does hold up to a certain degree in the sense that even following our LarshCast chat, all the boys that are in that group, we have a chat together, and following that chat, there's a lot of Twitter stuff posted, and I would link to that. And the perception of what's going on there, like, I have a lot of buddies that I talk hockey with that within that LarshCast group and outside of that. And a lot of times I see something on Twitter that these guys have posted and I'm thinking, oh my God, that's not reflective of literally anybody I've talked to. Where is this sort of thing coming from? And I think Twitter's very reactionary. You know, people are immediately mad about something that's happened and they're posting that. They don't have time to digest it. They don't have time to think about it. They are just responding in the moment. And it's no different than if you go home and you say the first thing you think to your girlfriend or wife. Like, it's probably not reflective of what you think overall. And once you have a chance to actually take a step back, your view changes slightly. But once it's out on Twitter, it's out. And then people just build off of that and build off of that. And it becomes this self-fulfilling prophecy of one weird idea that just gets blown up.
Well, and I'm not trying to say that like all the Canuck fans that aren't on Twitter aren't educated. Like, That's not what I'm getting at.
Yeah.
What I'm saying is the most vocal people on Canuck Twitter are super engaged on the scale of hockey fans, right? Like if you're someone
that's super engaged Twitter
to see what people are saying and tweeting about it every day, like you are tapped in. And that's not to say that because you're not on Twitter, you can't be that tapped in, but like, you know, it's the same thing we talk about in sports radio. Like the most passionate people you hear from are the people that you actually hear from, the people that call in or the people that text. Those are the people that are listening to your shows every single day. It's the same with a sports team, right? But it doesn't mean that there isn't a large portion out there of Canuck fans that are still fans, but it's not as big a part of their lives maybe as some others. And so because you only get that one segment of the fan base on Twitter, or at least that's vocally on Twitter, that shapes the narrative when in fact, you know, there are lots of people I talk to about the Canucks just casually in life that aren't as, you know, maybe not on Twitter, or if they are, they're, you know, not super vocal about it. And I'll hear some very ranging opinions on, you know, things the organization has done as a whole. And it's just one of those things that, you know, when you get into that Twitter bubble, it seems like everything is one way. And, you know, it comes back to what I was saying earlier. 99.9% of fans of this team are going to be cheering come puck drop against Minnesota.
There's one other aspect to Twitter is that you don't just get fans in your own market. You know, Canucks Twitter is notorious now. You know, I think I see at NHL.com and a bunch of different, you know, lists come out. They're trolling us. They know there's going to be a reaction out of it. If you don't put Pettersson on a top 15 list, all of a sudden your post is going to blow up. And now, you know, 1,500 more people read it. So there's an active like component there. But you look at these polls that would go out, a lot of people that aren't invested in a team that you see with fans, they're going to think more, you know, generic. They're going to think more to the sense of what is better in the long-term picture that may or may not occur. Like they'll vote, yeah, Lafreniere makes sense, but they're not as invested in the team and don't care as much about Pettersson getting the playoff experience or Hughes getting the playoff experience and what that can do to potentially build their own dynasty without Lafreniere. You know, like you don't need Laffy to he would help, but that's not to say we won't have a dynasty without him. If we continue to build around the young core that we have now, two of the brightest young stars in the NHL, there could already be a dynasty in the making. And so,
let's like, get one, man. One.
I know. I hate to say that.
Don't say dynasty, man.
No,
that's a crazy word in 2020.
Especially for 50 years of those stuff.
But Batch, you get what I'm saying? Like, the votes could be skewed in the sense of fair weather and casual fans.
No, exactly. And like, you look, I think it was Mike Russo who writes for The Athletic, covers the Minnesota Wild, did a poll with the same thing in Minnesota, being like, you know, what would you rather see? Minnesota beats Vancouver, Minnesota gets a chance at first overall pick. And, you know, the first overall pick won that poll. But I heard from people on Twitter who were like, yeah, I'm a Canuck fan. And I went and voted for first overall
pick. So it's got people who are in a perfect vacuum too, though. Like they don't lose anything if they say that. Like in their mind, saying that, yes, they want that pick, that means they get the player. You know what I mean? Like those polls, you have to take them with a grain of salt too.
And again, like, no, it's not like you have to fill out a form that confirms you're a Canuck fan before you get on those polls. You could have Leaf fans. You could have Wild fans. You could have Oilers fans. You could have anybody voting on that poll. So, you know, to a certain extent, those polls are reflective because most of the people, you know, listening to sports radio in Vancouver, engaging with it, are Canuck fans. But to, you know, hold them up as gospel and say, oh, you know, because, you know, 80% of people on Twitter voted that they wanted the Canucks to lose, that means the Canucks fan base wants the Canucks to lose. That's, you know, that's not at all.
No, and that's the thing, that's the key. And then, like I was saying, I'll wrap up this little Twitter segment here, but like sometimes that influence of those polls gets written about and it's not reflective of the true sentiment. But anyways, just to wrap up this discussion on the tank versus the playoffs, I think all of us here value playoff experience. We understand 12.5% is absolutely a fool's gold, and you don't want to invest in that. You'd rather invest in what you have right here and the value that comes from Pettersson experiencing the playoff competitive environment and building upon that. You need them to build upon that. You can't just enter the playoffs with a good team on paper and expect to see the results. They need to taste that intensity. Oh, they need to experience that. And they need to learn from that. If you don't win or go on a deep run this year, you come back and you train harder to do that next year. And that's why it's so important and so vital. But moving on, Batch, we want to get you to do another call, another play call. But this time, for Tanbeer, we want it to be about Jake Virtanen scoring his 20th goal of the season. So you can add anybody else to the mix, whoever's on his line. You can say Gaudette and Roussel if you want. Add in Hughes, whoever you want to do. But let's see if you can go 2 for 2 on the play calls here on the LarshCast. And then, oh, Tanbeer looks like he's getting ready there. What you got there, Tanbeer? Is that a cold one? You got a cold one there? Oh, he's got a cold one ready to go.
Okay. I got one in solidarity, but it's not shotgunnable. So I'm going to do my best here.
Okay, so here we go. Brendan Batcher on the mic. Jake Virtanen's 20th of the year. I'll leave it to you.
Here's Quinn Hughes in his own zone behind the net. Passes through the middle. It's a breakaway for Virtanen. Virtanen in clean. He scores! Jake Virtanen's got his 20th goal of the year.
Doubt it. Good job.
Thank you.
Hey, Ryan. Good job.
Ryan, too. How was that one off?
Okay, we're going to end this little. So we got Vic Nazar and Katie Caldwell joining us to talk a little football in a few moments here. Before they do, Batch, we're going to end this with you with Rapid Larsh, a new segment. You weren't here for, we didn't do this with you last time. It's new with the Zoom chats and the guests that we've had. We're going to ask you a few rapid fire questions. You can't think, okay? Just answer as quick as you can.
I'm good at not thinking. So that's okay.
Everybody says the same. All right. You ready for this one?
Let's do it.
Okay. Favorite play call ever?
Greg Adams.
Oh, no, sorry. Favorite call that you've called?
Oh, that I've called. Quinn Hughes, first NHL goal.
Nice. Okay, who's a Canucks sleeper prospect that has the best chance to make a big impact?
Jack Rathbone.
Nice. What's the best Canucks goalie pad setup you've ever seen?
Markstrom's setup with the skate jersey.
Okay. So I think your wife is a teacher, correct?
Yes.
So you and your wife have full-time jobs that once quarantine, you know, came around, they were halted. What did you guys pick up as new hobbies?
I particularly started baking a lot. she had to work through the whole thing, even from home.
That's right.
And stuff. So I was the one that had all the free time. So I cooked a lot and baked a lot.
Now, when she was doing the Zoom chats with her pupils, did you kind of come in the background a little bit, have some fun?
No, would have gotten huge trouble for that. So
I've been baking too.
She's a French immersion teacher too.
I think Don't mess with that.
Don't mess with that.
French immersion teacher too, and I don't speak a lick of French, so I would just be useless.
Oh, okay. What does it say? To parler en français? That's what they say, right?
Wait.
Comme ci, comme ça.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, the biggest difference between calling hockey games and soccer games?
Speed of the game, for sure.
Okay. Who's the hardest name to pronounce on the fly?
Melker Carlson is the one that always gives me trouble. And it's not a hard name, but it's the way the sounds run. So
I thought you were going to say Ronald's Kennens.
Oh, yeah, that's another tough one.
but those S names do get you as well, for sure.
Yeah.
Were you calling – I don't think you were calling NHL games at the time when they had Antti Laaksonen and those guys. No, I don't think so, right? Sounds like a medication, man. It's so funny.
Melker Carlson's a tough one, though.
Funny story, though. There's a goaltender in Buffalo called Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen. Goaltenders, and I legitimately use that as my like vocal warm up before the game. I'll be like Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen, pick a peck of peppers.
That's amazing.
Okay. Yeah. Last question for you on Rapid Larsh here with Brendan Batchelor. Will there be playoffs this year?
Yes.
Okay, you believe it, eh?
Oh, I love it.
We'll quickly talk about that. There's four hub cities that are left now. They just announced Vegas, Toronto, Edmonton, and Chicago. Where do you think the games are going to go?
Well, it sounds like the NHL is moving towards doing the right thing, which is to have both of them in Canada. And those are the rumblings we've been hearing today. You see some of the COVID numbers in the US, and you hear that like the European Union released a list of approved countries for people to travel to today. Canada's on that list and the US isn't. That's all you need to know. And for the safety of these guys and for the best chance to get the playoffs played, the fact that they're now looking at putting both of the hub cities in Canada seems to be the right decision. And just in general, it seems like the NHL has gone too far down the path. They seem to be committed to playing, if at all possible. At this point, you know, this far through the process, I would be surprised if there weren't games.
I think, you know, it's the smartest thing to do to move to Canada, but I don't want to see Canada bend their rules. And I know Dr. Bonnie Henry was never going to do it, but I don't know what's going on in Edmonton or Toronto. If as soon as you bend those rules, there, it's potential for an outbreak to the communities there. And that's what I don't want to see. I mean, the healthcare provider in me, first and foremost, it's about health. And if you're going to contribute to the spread of this virus, and now, you know, there's potential news of another virus similar to the H1N1 and the Spanish flu from 1918 in the mix now that could be have a pandemic potential, the last thing you want to do is worsen the current pandemic in that regard. So, Brendan Batchelor, thank you for joining us.
One last thing for me, like the conversation about whether they should or whether they will is very different, right? Like we should debate for an hour whether they should, but it seems like they're determined that they're going to. So if they're going to do it, Canada seems to be the safest place for them to get it done.
All right, so we're just gonna bring Vic Nizar and Katie Caldwell into the conversation here. There you guys are. How are you doing, Katie? How are you doing, Vic?
Happy to be back.
Yeah, good to have you back. Self-proclaimed best friend of the show, I think you said, right?
Well, I've been on twice in a week or something, so friend of the show didn't feel like enough.
And then returning to the show for the second time, Vic Nizar, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing well. I was going to ask Katie what her secret was. You know, two invites in a week, and I don't know. I think I was in on it in October, so you know, I'm happy to get the re-invite back.
To be fair, Vic, this is Bash's second time on the show too, so you know, it ain't nothing. We love y'all.
I think it's been like a year since I was on the show. So both of you guys are getting the invite more often than I am.
Careful what you wish for.
Hey, Batch, we invited you to come out and play hockey with us one time. But, you know, I think the one day we tried to do it a few times and you tried to come out. But the one day that it was going to work out, I forgot what happened, but at the last second the game was canceled or something. So
the snowstorm. It was the massive snowstorm.
Yes, the snowstorm. Yeah. Unfortunate. So we're going to be
called in the snowstorm. Nicely done.
So in the second half of the show here, we're going to do a lot of talk about Cam Newton joining the Patriots. We'll also touch a little bit more on the Canucks and the lottery and everything. Team playoffs versus team tank. I want to hear Bick's thoughts on that. Katie's thoughts on that. But Batch, before you go, your thoughts on Cam Newton joining the Patriots. I know you're not a big football guy, but you're still a football guy a little bit, right?
It's weird. Right. Like I saw, I think Madden put out a video today that had Cam Newton in the Patriots gear, like in a Madden video or whatever. And like, it doesn't look right. So I don't know. It's going to be strange. You know, it feels like with Tom Brady leaving and everything that obviously an era has ended, and, you know, the NFL and some of these players that are not going to be on the teams that we have seen them, it's going to feel very different when things come back, aside from the fact that, you know, COVID's happening and they're likely coming back in empty stadiums and everything like that. But, you know, if you'd said to me a year ago that you know, those two quarterbacks were going to move to where they moved, that Tom Brady was going to be in Tampa and that Cam Newton was going to land in New England, I wouldn't have expected that. But it'll certainly be interesting to see how it plays out.
Which one's weirder to you, Tom Brady in Tampa or Cam Newton on the Patriots?
It's tough. Right now I say Cam Newton on the Patriots just because it's fresh, right? Like we've had a couple of months to sit with Tom Brady and the Bucs and kind of get used to that. But,
he looked good in that jersey. It looks kind of weird.
Like, Tampa Bay, right?
Like he belongs in the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. It's weird.
Yeah. Whereas I'm not used to Cam Newton and the Patriots yet. But
no, maybe. Okay. True.
It's very true. It's still fresh. Just like your signature on our canvas here, right there, still fresh batch. Pleasure to have you back on the show. Thank you for joining us, and take care. All right.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Batch.
Bye, Beck. See you next week.
All right. Beck and Katie, this is going to be fun. I can't wait to talk football. We'll talk football first, but then we'll circle back because I know, Beck, you got some thoughts on the Canucks, and I want to hear about those as well. But since we've broached the subject about Cam Newton on the Patriots, what the hell, guys? Like, this is crazy. Who saw this potentially happening besides Nav? I got to give a shout out to Nav there. Nav on the Larchcast, he did call Cam Newton going to the Patriots. He likes to rub, you know, James, our former Larchcaster, he likes to rib him, everything Patriots because James is a diehard, and he actually predicted it. But who else predicted this? I didn't even think it was possible. What did you guys think? Vic, Katie, what did you think?
It felt like a lot of people talked themselves into Jarrett Stidham, so there must have been a plan coming at some point. I made the point of, like, you don't want to be the guy that replaces Tom Brady because you're coming at the expectation level is here. And it seems like the Patriots convinced everyone, hey, Jarrett Stidham's the guy, Jarrett Stidham's the guy. And so we spent months talking about Jarrett Stidham. And Cam Newton signs, nobody talked about Cam Newton replacing Tom Brady. It was Cam Newton so much better than Jarrett Stidham. This is like another Jedi mind trick by the Patriots and Bill Belichick that they somehow made everyone forget Tom Brady existed. Because otherwise, we would be talking about Newton and Brady nonstop. Nobody cares about that. It's like they knew a pandemic was coming. They are so good at this stuff. And they did it right before news came out of them cheating. It's unbelievable. Nobody talked about them cheating either.
That's what I was just going to bring up, Bic, is the timing of that. 16 minutes before Schefter announced that. That timing was a little too convenient for 100%. A Sunday night in the off season. Mm-hmm. And I'm sorry, like Debbie Downer has entered the chat, but we have to be realistic that cheating is a part of the Patriots brand. It's a part of the staff that they have on now. It's been, what, 3-4 major scandals, mm-hmm. at least. And they're giving up a third round draft pick.
Yeah.
And it just casually slips in there after they have just the biggest news where we all have to do emergency podcasts about it. Like that timing, I think, is something that not enough people are talking about.
You're right about the cheating. They're like the Patriots are the type of organization, whatever it takes to win. That's their mindset. Whatever it takes to win. They're scoping out the Cincinnati Bengals, the worst team in the league. You have to tape those guys and their play calls? Of course you do, because whatever it takes to win.
Belichick, that's what I have. Sorry, go ahead.
No, you fit it. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, that's where I have such a problem with it, is if you're going to cheat, do it right.
Like, cheat hard.
Chiefs and Ravens, get
real.
They
were, like, they were only caught. That's when they were caught. You think that they're not capturing tape on other teams?
That's exactly it.
Yeah.
They got sloppy.
They were always caught. Yeah.
Against the Bengals, they got sloppy. You didn't need the A squad. The A squad's scouting out the Chiefs, not the Bengals.
Yeah, they got multiple squads. That's so true. Bick, let me ask you this. You know, the Patriots with Tom Brady, like, he was a statue in the pocket. Everybody knows. He was the greatest of all time. You know, one of the best. He is the best pocket passer of all time. He uses arm strength and his mindset to succeed in that system. And they designed the system around that, protecting him. What is Belichick going to do with Cam Newton? What kind of play strategy are we going to see? Is it kind of similar to what they kind of had with Jacoby Brissett for that one game? Or what do you think, Bick?
The important part of what you just said there is what they designed for Tom Brady to work. There's not an organization in sports that has a better fundamental understanding of how their players succeed. Whoever it is, whether it's Julian Edelman, Jacoby Brissett, Kyle Van Noy, whoever it is, they put players in their positions to succeed. So he's not going to be Tom Brady. He doesn't need to be because they're not going to ask him to be. When you look at what the talent they have around him, it's not just that they signed Cam Newton, who's a really good quarterback. It's that they signed a rushing QB. that can kind of defeat the issues that defenses are going to present to them, because they don't have skill position players. Like, they don't have guys who can win on the outside. You needed a rushing QB degree to help move the ball and, you know, try to be inventive. And Cam Newton is, it feels like Bill Belichick's like new chess piece, new toy. He's done this with like Aaron Hernandez. He's done this with Kevin Falk or James White currently. This is like a new piece that he gets to play with and, you know, kind of nerd out on. I think we're going to see like 1950s, 60s style football, where it's like, let's try some triple options and stuff like that.
Yeah, the triple option is something I was thinking about. You know, doing some reading and research on it. Adding that triple option to the game is really, you know, something that Belichick, we haven't seen a lot out of. But you know, either you pitch it or you get handed off to the running back, or you run yourself. And so that's something I'm excited to see how they incorporate Cam Newton. But is he healthy? Like, is he healthy enough to use as a runner? He's gone through a myriad of injuries here. How healthy is he? Can you actually rely on him to run?
Those videos look pretty good so far. Of you've seen his training videos, man. He looks like
he's motivated.
He's motivated. He looks healthy for the first time in a while, I'll say.
And it's going to be like not a typical Patriots offense, right? That's it's going to fuck with a lot of teams, I feel like, because these teams are so used to Tom Brady and the O-line protecting Brady all the time. Now you can see Cam Newton running through, like, I don't think he'll try running through any D lineman anymore because he's got some injury issues. But, you know, I think that I think he'll have success, because I've always been a big Cam Newton fan, believe it or not. And I always wanted him to do well in Carolina. That one year he won MVP, it was nice to see him win. But I don't know, I think he'll do good in the Patriots system.
Well, and make no mistake about it, too. This is Bill Belichick's career-defining moment. Like, this is going to define his legacy, because so much of what he's done is tied to Tom Brady. It just is. Those two are going to be tied together for the rest of history. Belichick, so for him, exactly. So for him to have a completely different quarterback, have the opportunity to build an offense around that, he's got to see this as a chance to cement his legacy too. So I think he's going to come correct. You're going to see a really, really strong system out of the gate. It's just a question of whether those players can make the adjustment and implement that system right away.
I feel like that's a yes and a no, because there's such a big caveat with Cam Newton if we don't know what his health looks like, especially in such a crazy offseason where we don't have the typical steps that one would go through where you're working out with them in person. So I think you're right where it is a big part of what Bill Belichick's legacy is going to look like. But at the same time, a lot of that might just be factors beyond his control, because that's what a lot of the conversations are right now. And we started this podcast with it. If he's healthy, there's this, like, it's not even really an asterisk. It's kind of just his identity at this point, where you can be an MVP and then all of a sudden in this crazy quarterback offseason, he doesn't have a job until the other day. But it's just one of those things where there's a reason that he sat there for that long. So I hear what you're saying, but just to play devil's advocate with that, if this was Joe Burrow going there, I think it would be different, where Cam Newton is known for being injured again and again and again.
Yeah, and I mean, only one team made him an offer, so that definitely speaks to what you're talking about.
Go ahead, Vic.
His Instagram videos right now, like, he looks shredded, man. He looks as menacing as Tambier does in this shot right now. Like, like, what's going on here? Like, look big? What's going
on here? No, not big. I have the Corona weight on. So. I think it's just good angle and good lighting. That's exactly what it is.
Vic, let me ask you this. You talk to a lot of football insiders and people in the community there. How, like, you know, were there any talks of Cam Newton being, you know, linked to the Patriots at all before this, you know, in the past few months or weeks? Did they have any interest there? Were they like they had their heart set on Stidham?
The football community kind of put out a lot of stuff in late March, April. And you think about the timeline of that, it's post-combine, pre-draft, around free agency. And, you know, there was speculation that this was going to happen, and it kind of flummoxed everyone why it didn't. And so that's when they're really going to stick with Stidham talk kind of started.
Mm-hmm. No. So
I think a lot of people weren't surprised that a transaction did happen. I think they're surprised how long it took.
Mm-hmm. Well, that kind of plays into the chess piece, you know, moving chess pieces like Belichick likes to do. Mm-hmm. Maybe they locked it in a few months ago and waited
Bill thought they won the division.
Well, waited for the division.
My brother-in-law, the Bills fan, and he was just talking about the other day. We were just hanging out, and he was like, "We got the division. We got the division." The next day, Cam Newton signs.
Well, that's a good question. Who's going to win the division now? Who do you think wins the division now?
I was firmly in the Bills were going to win the division. I've been so impressed with how they've built the roster the last 2 years, and they had another good offseason. So it's like, okay, this is the steps. You finally needed a window for the Patriots not to be as dominant. It emerged, and then it's gone. I think it's a coin toss. I think, like, the roster, the Bills roster is still better. But institutionally, like, front office, coaching staff, everything for the Patriots. It's not even just better. It's significantly better.
It's excellence is what it is.
Who has a better defense, you think? Who has a better defense? The Bills?
Yeah. And they had a spectacular draft.
Was the Patriots defense overrated last year, you think?
Well, you got to talk about play. You got to talk about, when you're talking about defense, you got to talk about the personnel versus the system and the coaching. So, like, in that respect, go ahead, Vic. What do you think?
It's the same conversation we have or at least I've said, when we compare, like, the Canucks and the Maple Leafs. I think the Maple Leafs have a better roster, but I think the team, the Canucks, might be better, like, playing together. The Patriots played together perfectly, but the better talent is on the Bills.
Mm-hmm. But, yeah, like you said, it's how you play together and how you're coached and whatnot. So let me go around the table. Katie, who do you think is going to win the division? You think the Bills? For this question, though, let's assume it's a healthy Cam Newton. So nothing wrong with his running ability.
For the record, I want to say I think he's healthy, and I think he's going to be awesome. Mm-hmm.
So let's assume that he can still track people. Who wins the division, Katie?
My initial instinct when I found out, given I was about 5 glasses of wine in, because it was late at night, but my initial reaction was, holy shit, this makes so much sense, and this and this and this, and you read the contract. My initial thought was, I'm still banking on Josh Allen leaping way forward this season. And I think there's a few quarterbacks that we're kind of looking, like, we're looking at Sam Darnold, we're looking at Baker Mayfield, kind of a lot of that same class to see what they're going to do. And this is the year where we find out who Josh Allen is. And like Vic was saying, the team around him, I want to say the Bills, and then I feel like I've gone through like 12 stages of grief with this whole signing, because I cheer for a team in the AFC, and it changes not only the AFC East, but the AFC in general. It changes the entire landscape. And it's uncomfortable, and I hate it, and I think it's a win-win for all parties involved. But the way it changes the AFC, I think it's the best O-line he's ever played with. On paper, that might be up for debate, but with the O-line and then with the defense they have, I think it's going to be, their run game is going to be mega improved if he's healthy. I think that's a big if, but like Vic said, I'm kind of on that train where I've seen the Instagram videos. Like, he looks like he's not missing a beat. And in 2018, he looked so, so good, and people forget that. Like, people forget that he got injured and he didn't just fall off a cliff. A lot of people think that it was his play that went right down. He got injured and that was just how it was. So if he is healthy, I still think it's going to be the Patriots, but it hurts. It hurts so bad.
It's so crazy to think, you know, like, oh, we finally gotten past the Patriots dynasty. It's finally in the past. Now the Chiefs can start one, or the Ravens, or my Saints can get back to the big dance and win. But oh, here comes Newton to the rescue for the Patriots. It's crazy to think that they're back. Like, they're a contender again. Yeah. Like, why can't we escape these guys?
It's like we saw a tiny bit of humility in Pats fans for the first time in my lifetime that I can remember.
Then it was gone.
Because it was like all of us are still kind of like, there's no way we're rolling with Jarrett Stidham and Brian Hoyer. But like you said, Vic, they were so good at convincing all of us. And then there was all that talk before the draft, like, there's no way, there's no way. And then his dog is drafting people slotted to go in the 7th round in the 2nd. So we're like, holy shit, maybe he's actually rolling with Jarrett Stidham. But when you look at it, and I think the timing of it is all really interesting, because I don't think if he signed when a lot of people thought he would have way long ago, he would have got him for this insane contract. Like, they have nothing to lose. Mm-hmm. It's unbelievable how they worked it. Because didn't they just have, they had $1 million in cap space, right?
Yeah, they were up against it.
The fact that they made this happen is just sickening. Oh. I respect it, but I hate it.
you got to know it's the Patriots. So there's definitely probably some incentives under the table that we're not going to hear about.
Guaranteed.
You know, Newton gets to host a few parties at the Kraft Manor probably or something like that. But I want to go back to how Belichick is going to design an offense and Josh McDaniels, how they're going to design an offense around Cam Newton. And, you know, one of the things I was looking at is the RPO, which is so successful now, and the Chiefs utilize it well, and the Eagles, when they brought it in, you know, they maximized the potential with it. I think you could have an entire offense designed around the RPO for Cam Newton that can thrive, because he is that type of quarterback that, you know, you find the seam pass on the weak side or you run. And it's so amazing to have that beast of a quarterback with the RPO. You know, Mahomes, he could run a little bit. He didn't really use it too much. He relied on his arm strength, his ridiculous sling and Randy Johnson style, you know, arm strength there. But Bic, what do you think? Like, what other types of plays are we going to see besides maybe the triple option, you know, the RPO, maybe some more zone reads? What do you think, Bic? Can you delve into that a little bit?
Yeah, the point I was getting to earlier, just how they don't really have a lot of skilled position players who can threaten guys or threaten defenses deep, right? So you are going to have some elements of what worked for them in the past with short dink and dunk offense. Here's the thing, in 2018 with North Turner, he actually succeeded doing that, was quite accurate, and you know, he's got that ability. The key for him is going to be understanding this, and this is what Tom Brady was so good at, understanding that I need to play for another down sometimes the defense wins and that's okay, and so I'm going to go to James White, he's going to get 5 yards and we have another down. Cam Newton's evolved that through his career. He's gotten better at it, but it's not stellar. So James White to me is going to be a huge part of this offense, in and around the line of scrimmage, and not even just in the RPO or read option, just understanding how you can utilize him. So again, if you're talking about fantasy leagues, PPR, this is a guy to kind of keep an eye on. He's been so good for so long. So can you design plays involving James White? Because again, they just don't have guys who can get downfield to open up space, and defenders are going to come creeping closer. They're always going to bring in an extra man in the box. And that's why that rushing QB is so important, because it evens up the numbers between how many guys are being blocked. And now you can have one unaccounted guy when you have a rushing QB. So like, they're going to be very diverse, but it's going to be exciting.
Speaking about the fantasy implications, Edelman had a really good year last year. I think he was top 15 wide receiver PPR. Well, what type of impact is this going to have on him? Because a lot of that is the chemistry with Tom Brady. Where do you see Edelman coming in this year? Where is he, your top 15 still? Is he in PPR or half PPR? Is he top 20 now? Like, what do you think?
I think he stays kind of where he's always kind of been. My biggest concern for him is going to be touchdowns. He always hovers around like 6 or 7. But now when you get into the red zone, you've got a red zone rushing QB there. If he is going to get 4 touchdowns, 3 touchdowns, that's a big difference from going from wide receiver 16 to wide receiver 24.
Yeah.
Right? You can jump pretty easily in that. So that's my biggest concern. Receptions, I still expect him to get around 90, 100. So he should still have retained most of his value.
You'll probably see a lot of empty sets in the red zone, I think. You know, more of them than usual with Belichick there. But what do you guys think in terms of fantasy implications, Tambir, Ryan, Katie, how does the Patriots roster on offense shape up now? What do you guys think?
I hear what Vic's saying, but I feel like it might drop off a little bit just because of what he's saying, where Newton shines on third downs and in the red zone. And I think they're going to be so focused on the run game that I just don't know if Edelman fits into that as much as before. But then I who knows, because you brought up the chemistry with Tom Brady. This is such a crazy offseason where nobody really has chemistry because everything's through Zoom and whichever. So I don't know.
That's very true. That's a very good point, actually. Yeah.
I'm not super high on Sony Michel. He's never done it for me. He's someone I've drafted. Bic, we've talked about him before, but he's never passed the eye test for me. And then I was listening to the Mina Kimes show featuring Lenny, and she brought it up, because I know I can't even begin to pretend I know anything about analytics. And she brought that up, that he's never passed the eye test for her, but then she matches it up with the analytics and it says it too. So there are a few players that I think other people are maybe higher on in the Pats offense, but it's so hard to tell because we just don't really know what any of this is going to look like. But I think it is going to be really ground and pound run heavy, and I don't know what that necessarily means, but I'm not in a big rush to draft anybody in my leagues anyways that aren't part of a system that's kind of really, really stuck together. Like you look at the Ravens and the Chiefs, and I think fantasy-wise, that's probably going to be a bit safer moving forward, but who actually knows?
Yeah, my money's on the teams that have some synergy previously, but it's an excellent point that with all these Zoom meetings and everybody being separated, it's a crapshoot. To me, I think the X factor with the Patriots is going to be a healthy Edelman, because like we've already discussed, it's going to be a heavy, heavy run focus for the Patriots this year. But if they've got some options, if they've got some pass options, you know, the team itself, whether or not Cam Newton fits in right away, those short and outs are still going to be something they do very, very well. But if Edelman opens up as an option and they can get some synergy there between him and Newton, then all of a sudden you're not talking about that one-sided offense. There's a bit of a dynamic nature to it. All of a sudden you have to worry about more things. You know, it's to bring it back to the Canucks again, as soon as we add Quinn Hughes up on the point, all of a sudden there's not just Pettersson out there that you have to worry about. There's another person that draws your focus away. You know, you have another healthy superstar as it is, really helps take some of the load off of Newton to go out and do what he needs to do.
Tamir, what do you think?
Yeah, I think the Patriots are going to do what they do best. You know, throw it 5 yards, go for another down, run the ball, get a first down, just go down the field. But I don't know much about what they – like, I know what to do offensively, but, like, I don't know, like, if they're going to, like, with the touchdowns and stuff, because they're going to have Cam probably run for a lot of TDs, I feel like, this year. But I think the kicker – is going to be a big part of their game. Like, they're going to march down the field and hope that the kicker is good, because I don't think they have many weapons in the end zone for Newton. So
I did not expect kicker talk. What a treat!
Yeah, the kicker is going to be very important for the Patriots to win games.
It's an interesting point, because I think if you think about their whole, you know, career, Tom Brady versus Cam Newton, Tom Brady is a much better red zone quarterback. Maybe, you know, in terms of the 10 to 15 yards out, obviously inside the five, you're going to think Cam Newton's, the numbers probably show Cam Newton is better, but around that mark, you might see a lot of, you know, errant passes or incomplete passes. And, you know, they don't get to knock it in, and then they're going to use the kicker a lot. Do you think there'll be more opportunities for the kicker with Cam Newton, Bic, or less?
I've got no answer on kicker talk. I just know it's like, I think his name is Rohrwasser or something like that. He's a rookie. That's all I know.
Okay.
More opportunities, man. It's the Patriots give their kicker opportunities because they're always so efficient moving the ball down the field.
Who are their weapons?
That's the bigger question than anything, right?
Edelman, like you said, he's not going to get that many opportunities because of running the ball so much. So that's where I look at it. Like, I don't know if they're going to be a good team in the red zone. So I feel like they're going to be kicking the ball a lot.
And what are your final thoughts then? What are your guys' final thoughts on this? And we're going to go back to the Canucks a little bit. I want to hear Bic's thoughts on the team. 12.5%.
Can I ask Bic a Seahawks question?
Okay, you can do that.
What's going on with our cornerbacks? Like, Dunbar got in trouble. Do you know what happened with him?
I think we're still waiting and seeing on that. Okay. I would assume he's going to be playing at this stage.
We need him.
But yeah, Dunbar, Griffin, Flowers is interesting. The big question is always going to be a nickel, because that was a big issue. They stayed in base formation so much last year, three linebackers, and it didn't really work at all. It seems like that's their intention once again. It helps when Bruce Irvin comes back and a bit more of an athlete in coverage potentially versus Michael Kendricks. But yeah, the corners is kind of an issue. The idea of acquiring Dunbar makes a lot of sense, but if he's not ready to go, that's a big issue. But I would assume he's going to play. The case has kind of lingered on, and we haven't heard a lot, so. At this stage, I'm operating under the belief that he's playing.
Katie.
Okay, I gotta stop everybody here, because I was listening. Okay, maybe you've picked up on the fact that TJ's not really asking me a question about football. It's because I don't know anything about football. All right. And earlier today, Bic, you were on the radio and you were discussing how you helped Luke the bartender a friend of our podcast and a friend of Sportsnet 650 works down at Colony Bars. Pick a football team. So there was like
a
bunch of questions you asked them. Yeah. So how can I pick a football team that I can start following? And Katie, if you have any input on this, I would love to hear that too.
I'll go after
how it. Can I get into the how can I get into the football game here?
Vegas.
All right, man. Let's do this the long way. Like, what's important to you? Like, is tradition important to you? Is like history of winning important to you? Do you like, do you want a trendy team? Do you want to be a bandwagoner? Like what's important to you?
I am shameless, so I'll say I'll hop on a bandwagon, no problem.
Okay. does a team, like, do they need to be an old team, like a historic team?
They could be a historic team. Yeah, I wouldn't mind that. If there is like, you know, a history there that I can pick up on, I can learn about, I can read about, I would enjoy that.
Okay. Do they need to have cool jerseys?
Yes. Great
question. Rules out the Browns.
Yes.
Oh yeah.
They have to.
Yeah, like that's a really important question, man. Every Sunday, you don't want to tune in to like watch a team that's wearing orange when their name is the Browns, right? You don't want that.
Also, can I add one more question to help in the decision? Because I have points to go on after, but I chose my team before I realized that I might one day want to travel to that place. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I chose.
Oh, that's a really good point. Really good point.
Anybody who was wondering, I chose Indiana.
Yeah. Okay. Like, don't choose Pittsburgh. Been to Pittsburgh. Don't choose Pittsburgh.
Yeah. Okay. Anyways, keep asking your questions, Bick.
Okay. Is it too late to go back to San Diego now? The San Diego Chargers? Come on.
I think Vegas really? Is perfect.
Do you want to go visit? They're
Vegas. Yeah.
Dude, I want to go visit. Hell yeah. I love to travel. So
okay, that takes a lot of the Midwest right out of the question.
Okay, all right.
So cool jerseys matters. What else should we ask here?
Katie has some stuff to ask.
The online community matters. Like Canucks Twitter is famous.
Yeah.
Does the Twitter community matter to you?
I don't know. I mean, with my experience on Canucks Twitter, like I love Canucks Twitter here and there, but sometimes it could just leave you reeling, and I don't want to be like, I don't want that same experience with my football team where for a couple of days I'm thinking about something some random guy said to me. So it matters, but if it's not like polarizing, you know, like if it's uplifting community, sure, I'd love to be part of that.
Does it matter that O.J. Simpson was one of the best players in franchise history?
Great question.
Who's O.J. Simpson?
Oh, come on.
Nice.
You probably know him as Ornithal James.
Oh, there you go. There you go.
I don't know. Because I don't know what team O.J. Simpson played for. So, okay, it matters. Let's say it matters.
Yeah. Right, but you know he allegedly murdered someone, right? So.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Two someones.
Yeah.
And that word allegedly is generous.
Very, very generous.
Gloves right now, Galoo, what's going on?
Hey, man, if the glove don't fit, you must have quit. I think we landed on, like, the Baltimore Ravens, maybe the Chiefs, because they've got good history, the Cowboys, cool jerseys, great helmet.
Don't obviously. Pick the Cowboys, man.
What about Denver?
I think I have the answer, you guys.
Go ahead, Katie.
Denver's not bandwagon.
Let's hear this. Katie, go ahead. What's the answer?
So there is a reason why I would usually say Denver, because I think Drew Locke has a lot of potential and their offense is a huge upgrade this year. But because they have been in the Super Bowl fairly recently, I feel like that's a little bandwagon-esque. I went through this with a friend of mine last year and we chose her team. And it was midway through the season, and she ended up choosing the Buffalo Bills, which has since been pretty exciting for her up until a couple days ago. But it was between that and Jacksonville Jaguars, because Gardner Minshew had just burst onto the scene in the most perfect way possible. But we landed on the Bills for a multitude of reasons, and now she's super thrilled about it because they have a lot of potential. I think the answer right here is the Arizona Cardinals. For a multitude of reasons.
Wow.
Their offense stepped up big time this year with the most hilarious trade in the world that was so bad that distracted the world from a global pandemic collectively at the beginning of the quarantine. So
that sounds like something I would be part of.
adding DeAndre Hopkins to that offense, and I feel like this is the year where Kyler Murray goes off.
Mm-hmm.
I've already predicted that. It is a difficult division, but a lot of those games are really fun. I love that entire division that I just think they haven't been good for so long that there's not a lot of history of people jumping on the Cards bandwagon. I kind of feel like next year, year after, like I don't think this is necessarily the year where they go to the Super Bowl, but I'm looking at them next season, and if you jump on their bandwagon right now, think about how sweet you look next year where they're doing it.
It'd be kind of a
really good point.
It'd be kind of a buy low.
I think the jerseys are sweet.
I was going to ask you.
They're good.
Arizona weather is dope. I maybe don't want to be in Arizona at this exact time in the world, but other than that, Arizona's fine.
I was going to say Arizona, the other team, and it hurts me to say this because it's another NFC West team, but I was going to say San Francisco. Like,
yeah,
one of the best jerseys in the league. They just made the Super Bowl. That's trendy. Mm. They got history. It's a great city to go travel to.
Yeah.
So.
Yep.
Okay. All right. So I got two 49ers. Options. I got the Arizona Cardinals and the San Francisco 49ers.
No, they're don't take 49ers, the 49ers.
Right? Let's go around. Let's go around. So Tamir says no to the 49ers. So he's picking the Cardinals.
I want you to pick the Bills.
49ers. Go 49ers.
Well, how about this? Hold on, guys. Three teams. 49ers. Cardinals or Bills, okay? Tambier, who's your pick?
I want suggestions. I want suggestions. I'm gonna make the decision myself.
Buffalo went to 4 straight Super Bowls, right?
Yeah.
And they lost all 4?
Yeah.
You should be a Bills fan.
Okay, so Tambier suggests Buffalo.
Similar to Canucks. Yeah, you know. I like Bills. You got a history of getting close.
You got a history of losing.
Yeah,
it'll be big.
Getting close and losing too. So
Ryan suggests
Bills.
He suggests the Bills too.
Yeah.
Katie, what do you suggest?
Well, I have a follow-up question to that. If we're bringing the Bills into it, I need to know how much of a sociopath you are at parties. Yeah. Because you're going to be up on chairs. You're going to be jumping into shit that's on fire. You're going to be chugging 17 beers before 7 a.m. Like,
I should have been a Bills.
Go Bills.
I don't think you're making the argument against you think you are. I think you're making an argument for her.
I think so, you need to be able to hang to be in that market. That's
Katie, fun. No. I cannot hang with that. I drink like 5, maybe 10 times a year. I chill out.
Never mind.
Cardinals, let's go.
I'm not a party.
Yeah, no, okay.
So, but hold on, Big. I'm going to ask Big too, but Katie, when you mentioned your friend and she's a new Bills fan, I was going to ask, is she suddenly purchasing a lot of tables? That's crazy. What's going on?
The only words I need to say to that are chicken hang. Chicken hang.
Hey, so what do you suggest officially, Bick, for Gulu? Out of those three options.
I don't like it, but I'm following his criteria. I'll say the 49ers.
Okay.
Okay. 49. Hold on. Let me do this, TJ. I'm going to.
Well, you know what my suggestion?
I do. Just 1 second. Okay. Bix is 49ers. Okay. Ryan, your last call.
Bills.
Tambier.
Bills.
TJ.
The New Orleans Saints. Come on now. You just got to go with the Saints.
Stop. On the board. Not even on the board.
Not even on the board. Katie.
My final choice is the Cardinals, but I do have one small caveat, and I don't know if maybe I'm not reading the room here properly, but none of us can deny how big of a rocket Jimmy G is. Like, let's get serious about 1 second.
Yeah, he's pretty charming there, I gotta admit. The flow and the look, he's got the Tom Brady Jr. look on. You know, he's so confident, and he delivered his first debut with the 49ers and his first full season with the 49ers. He is truly hot stuff. I agree with Katie there. But
who's Jimmy G?
Jimmy Garoppolo. Come on, Gulu.
Garops is pretty damn handsome.
You gotta pick a team, man.
Yeah,
the fact that he has a G. The fact that he has a G in his name, Jimmy G. Gulu.
If you're a 49ers fan, I'm gonna chirp you every time.
I kind of want you to be a 49ers fan just so I can have one extra person to
yes.
Yeah, yeah,
right.
There you go. Okay, so Gulu, what is it?
49ers fan, so you can hate on me?
No, Gulu.
Yes.
What is this?
That's how fandom works.
Okay, Gulu, you gotta make a pick. You gotta pick.
I will announce on Twitter. Let me think about this.
That's fine.
Need some time.
All right.
Okay, that's fine.
Need some time. Yes.
Let's get back to the Canucks here. And, you know, we talked with Batch earlier in the show about the whole situation. You know, if the Canucks lose to the Wild, they enter into a lottery with a 12.5% chance of drafting first overall. But the alternative is, obviously, they go on a run in the playoffs, get some really important vital experience for the young boys, and also, you know, our current franchise centerman and franchise defenseman that we already have on the team. And also the fact that we're up against some cap issues that with the pandemic, you know, and the flat cap now, we may not have Markey and Toffoli on this team next year. You know, there's no guarantees with this lineup. So Bick and Katie, actually, I'll start with you, Katie. What are your thoughts on this whole situation? Do you agree with fans that are cheering against the team in the play-in round? And, you know, overall, what are your thoughts?
I think it's pure unadulterated bullshit that anyone in the entire world, if you're going to call yourself a Canucks fan and if you're going to cheer against them in the playoffs, get real.
I like that.
I don't know what else to say about it. I think it's ridiculous. You're in the playoffs. You've been dying for this. You've got the most complete team you've had in a long time. It's a pandemic, and we might be playing hockey. And you're seriously going to be cheering for your team to lose for a 12.5% chance that you know, Canucks fans, you're not going to land on.
Yeah. Never in a million years are we going to win the lottery.
Not happening.
It is a fun added bonus that if, God forbid, they are knocked out in the first round, which could happen. Minnesota's got a good team. I feel like that is a fun added bonus that we wouldn't have otherwise had. But otherwise, you go all in on your team. Look at Detroit. Don't ever be team tank. Look how that worked out for them.
Yep.
I knew there was a reason. I loved you, Katie. I'm with you 100%.
Is that why I'm the best friend of the show?
I called.
The best friend of the show.
I called earlier the fans that, like, you know, that cheer against their team. They're akin to shitty drivers on the road. They're shitty drivers. You still respect them as drivers, but they are shitty ass drivers. Bick, what do you say?
Great, I got to follow her. This is awesome.
On fuego. That's Katie on fuego, baby.
I think there's a lot of gatekeeping at times of like, oh, you've got to do this to be this kind of fan. Because I do think, call me naive, I do think when pucks drop, everyone's cheering for a W, right? I do believe that. And there's a difference between tanking and naturally losing. Like, I think Team Tank just needs a better marketer. Like, they got it to be like, hey, we're not trying to tank, but we're okay with naturally losing. And so I think, like, this is kind of win-win for the Canucks. If
100%.
Totally.
If they do win a game.
There's no lose.
Yeah, right? And especially in pandemic era, you take your silver linings when you can. So if you beat the Wild, awesome. You're going to go into the playoffs. You get valuable experience and all of that. And it kind of instills that winning culture, which is really important. So the thing I don't understand at all is supporting them to lose fundamentally goes against the idea of being a fan. But, okay, putting that aside, it rejects the reality of players and coaches wouldn't, like, don't think like that. So if you're supporting them to lose, you're already divorced from reality that doesn't exist, because every time players starts a game, they're trying to win the game. Nobody's attempting to accomplish the feat you want. And that's where I get a bit confused out of this is, yes, there's an outcome of them winning first overall pick, which is probably best for the franchise outside of winning a Stanley Cup. It's just the conversation is divorced from reality. And I'm a bit confused as to why people are so eager to have that conversation that isn't based in anything.
We never learned anything from The Last Dance. Like Michael Jordan said, the Cubs have been rebuilding for 50 years. And that's a losing mentality right there, right? And you want to be able to get that winning culture, and JT Miller coming in from Tampa brought that over, and you could see that it brought that sort of to Vancouver, and still long ways to go, but it's almost there.
And I would also argue that, you know, aside from winning the cup, and I know in Vancouver it's faux pas to say it, but even making the cup finals with a young team that we have, that could be more instrumental to their long-term success than a draft pick that may or may not work out. Like Lafreniere, we all think he's going to be a great player, but we've seen the Alexander Daigs and the Patrick Stephans of the world that they're all number one unanimously. And what happens? Something goes wrong. and they don't develop. So there's no guarantee with Lafreniere. But what is guaranteed, if the team makes the cup finals, whether you win or lose, Penguins, when Crosby was 20, made the finals. They lost. He came back age 21, and he won. There's experience that you get there that's so valuable to the long-term success of your players, especially your young players. I would argue that it's cup finals win, cup final loss, even conference final, you know, being there. And then we can talk about landing that first pick because it's not a guarantee. Lafreniere right now is just that ice cream cone that looks delicious on the ad. But then you go to the ice cream shop and you get, what the hell is this crap, right? Like, you don't know. You don't know what you're going to get.
It's like a burger commercial. Like,
yeah,
a burger
commercial. They look so good on TV and you get, what the hell is this thing, right? You know, like,
yeah. Oh, I have two points.
I've seen the conversations on Twitter too of 12.5%, maybe winning a round or two. It gets framed, you know, not to go after you here, TJ, just the idea of, like, you're talking about like a cup versus first overall pick. Like, you're talking about something that's certain of like, hey, here's Alex Lafreniere. You want to take him? Yeah, everyone's going to want to jump on that. Versus this is how I've seen the conversation framed of, oh, maybe winning a round or two. It's tough to win 19 games. But again, this goes back to how players approach this. It's, you actually kind of have to look at it of winning three games and then you get four more games.
Yeah.
You win those four games, you get four more games. Yeah. It's not, you can't look at it as winning 19 games as a whole.
Yeah.
While we like to do that and be like, oh, how you win a cup is you win 19 games. Yes. But you've got to break it up into segments. And it's easier to then say, hey, do you want a 50-50 chance at beating the Wild versus 12.5% chance of getting a first overall pick? And that's a more honest conversation than saying you've got a 3% chance of winning the cup.
Well, so let's talk about the actual odds to win the cup. When the season ended, it was 50-1 when the pandemic hit. And that was, you know, obviously the Canucks were on they were kind of spiraling out down the ranks and down the conference standings. And it looked a little off, but we were missing Markstrom and we, you know, Besser just got healthy. So we didn't have the true makeup of the team and them all firing on all cylinders. I don't think the odds for the Canucks are 50-1. I think they redid the odds. They're 30-1. I would say they're 20-1. I think there's a 5% chance that Canucks can go on and win the cup. And that's because we've never seen the entire team play. You've never seen Markstrom in net with our healthy top six. When you have a healthy top six, that's two lines that could play two-way hockey that alleviates so much pressure off your bottom six and your decor. And, you know, you're talking about the Canucks and their underlying metrics. Well, none of the numbers that you're looking at can actually be applied to a team that you've never seen play. Adding that top six into the mix, you know, you can shift the entire landscape of the team that you have. And so I don't agree with the 50-1, 30-1. I think it's 20-1. And if you think about that 5%, and then you weigh it against right now what the odds are to land that first overall pick, 12.5% if you lose, call it a 50-50 series. If you multiply 50% by 12.5%, it's actually 6.25% at this point today that they will land the first overall pick. So you're going by 5% to win the cup over 6.25% to land that first overall pick, having to lose to the Wild first. The numbers are pretty even to me.
That's some
absolutely nonsense. Absolutely nonsense. It's nonsense to hear anybody on Team Tank. I don't want to see it. Get your shitty ass off the road. Let's go, Canucks. Go. Come on.
Well, one point with that, though,
is questioning your math there. I'm not sure that 6.5% checks out.
6.25%. If you multiply a 50-50% chance of winning against the Wild, and you multiply that by 12.5%, you get 6.25%.
Because one of you
is going to win. It's a joint probability.
That's right.
Here's the one number that matters to me, guys, is age. Because these guys have been off for a long time. They haven't been moving their feet. There's no way they are ready for a game situation. Canucks have a much younger roster than the Minnesota Wild. And I think all of us were either pushing 30 or in our 30s at this point. I can tell you, getting moving in my 30s is a hell of a lot different than getting moving in my 20s.
That's true.
So, The big X factor that I don't feel like many people are talking about is Canucks have a huge advantage in that they have young legs on the ice. The majority of the team, the core of that team, are all young players. So, you know, I think they're in a better space to ramp up quickly in a short series than a team like Minnesota is.
That's, Final, has to, oh, sorry, go ahead.
I'll just say final thoughts all around the table here. Go ahead, Katie.
So it's funny that we're talking about age, because I think that was one of my stages of grief with Cam Newton, where one of the first things I thought is, and listeners, don't Google how old he is. Well, let's say 24-ish, but Cam Newton and I are the same age. And I'm at a point in my life where I like gently step off a stair the wrong way. And I'm like, dope, my knee hurts for the rest of time now. So like, I think when you look at how your body rebounds with injuries and things like that, especially in a time right now where the teams aren't all practicing together, that does really, really, really help the Canucks with age and just rebounding from injury. Mm-hmm. But TJ, what you were saying with, the Canucks have a really big advantage. I think they do with all of their players coming back healthy. But one thing that we really need to remember, so is everyone else.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because I've talked to people about the Preds too, and I've had the same conversation where I'm like, well, Ellis is and this and this and this. And then it was kind of that moment of like, shit, I guess you could go on any podcast being a fan of any team and being like, I guess we're all kind of getting healthy. So, but that's also really fun. Like, we've never had that in our lifetime.
Yes.
We had a pause before the playoffs where everybody has somewhat of an even playing field.
And nobody is healthy during the playoffs either. Nobody stays healthy during the playoffs. So who knows if Toffoli gets hurt or Markstrom gets hurt.
No, for sure.
We're back to the Canucks that were losing a few games at the end there. So,
well, because think about when every playoff series ends and a team gets out and they're like, I had 10 broken ribs and 2 broken feet and a ruptured lung. And like, and you're like, how were you even walking? Yeah. But like, that's what happens. Yeah. You find out after the playoffs that every single person was unbelievably hurt. And that's why these playoffs, if they happen, I think are super exciting. Mm-hmm. But I do look at the Canucks and I get pumped about that. But then I do have the moment of like, shit, everyone else is healthy too.
So the one thing I would add to that, Katie, you know, yeah, you're talking about everybody's healthy. But going back to the point that I made, we've never seen one single game with our healthy team. Mm-hmm. You've seen it with other teams. If you think about our top six, it's like with a healthy top six, it's elite. It's one of the best in the league. Like, if you just look at it, it's elite, and we've never seen it. Well, one game we saw that with Demko, but that's the whole point. Like, yeah, you're right. You're absolutely right. All these teams are going to be healthy too, but there's only one unknown, and it's the Canucks when they're fully healthy. We haven't seen it. I think it's something special waiting to happen. I hope we get to see it happen. Obviously, make sure that everything is healthy first and foremost and going to be safe. But I'm running out of battery here, guys, so we're going to try to wind it down here. Bick and Katie, thank you so much for joining us. It was absolutely fun having you back on, Katie, and you back on, Bick. Bick, help me out here. Where did you sign on the canvas? Do you remember?
I think bottom right.
You're bottom right, so where are we talking?
Well,
there he goes again.
I think that green one.
Oh, this thing's going to fall. Okay, you're, what, this one here?
Right, yeah, I think that's me.
Okay, well, we're only missing you, Katie, so... One of these days when you can travel and, you know, safely travel, we'll get you to come and sign that canvas.
Spring 2024. I can't wait.
Hey.
Optimism.
Oh, my God. Let me knock some more optimism in you. Katie and Bick, always a pleasure having you on. Oh, look, I just got a warning that my tablet's going to shut down in 30 seconds. So follow us on LarshCast, everybody, on Twitter and Instagram, I mean, at LarshCast. Stay tuned for the Luongo jersey giveaway. You know what's funny? I'm going to let it close out with me closing out. Go Canucks, go. The Canucks are going to win the cup. All right? The COVID cup is ours. Okay, I don't know how much time I have left here. Tanbeer, you're not banned from the LarshCast. You may be banned from TSN, but you're not banned from the LarshCast. Ryan, you're a beauty. Gulu, I think I'm done.
Oh. Here you go. Oh,
all right, guys. Follow us on the LarshCast. Thank you, Katie and Vic, for joining us. Today.
Thanks, guys.
Have a good day. Bye.
Pleasure. Thank you.